It's a privilege to be in God's house again this morning with God's people, and I've been enjoying our time with you so far, and I thank you for the friendship, the hospitality that you've been showing to us. And it's interesting to see some visitors here. I'm realizing that this weekend has conspired because of a number of different events to bring people together that I have connections with from other places. So welcome. Good to see you all here this morning. Some folks from my parents' area of Pennsylvania. 21st century preaching is a little bit intimidating. When I heard David talk about the billboard that has the website for your church and that all of the sermons are accessible there, it gives a preacher pause to realize that what he says is available for the whole world to access. And there's a certain sobering effect that brings. It's a wonderful tool for people to access the gospel, but somehow it seems to up the stakes a little bit when you realize that anybody in the world can go find it and listen to what you have to say. Something I wanted to mention last night that I didn't, perhaps you got the point, but I want to reemphasize again for young people. I think that every young person should at least consider a time of voluntary service. I'm not saying that it is for everybody, because if it's mandatory, then it's not voluntary, right? But I think every young person should consider that might be part of what God has for them. I know of no young person that has spent time in voluntary service and comes back and says, that was the biggest waste of 2 years of my life. Nobody says that. And almost all of them say, it's perhaps one of the best things that I have ever done. It orients a person's life, I believe, for a life of service, whether it's on the front lines of mission work or the back lines at home. I think that's something that all young people should consider. Previous generation, my parents' generation and your grandparents' generation didn't have the choice. Uncle Sam mandated that they leave home for a couple years. And by the way, anybody here that would have been in the 1W program, James, did you serve in 1W? There were some exemptions along the way, but you have to be close to 75, I think. Nathan, you're too young, right?
Right.
And well, I didn't mean to insult you or anything, but anybody here that has served in 1W program? Here we've got one. My dad was one of the last. He was born in 1951. So yeah, you've got to be in your mid-70s to have experienced the draft. And the 1W program, it wasn't a church program. It was a government program. And so there were some things that were not ideal about 1W. There were some casualties from among our Anabaptist circles. But the ones that just simply because there was a lack of structure, there weren't churches readily available for 1W folks to attend, and there was not much spiritual support. They were kind of on their own, at least in the early years, until the churches realized there needed to be better support for those young people. But they didn't have the choice. They just simply understood that when the draft was in place, you were either going to go to the Army or you were going to sign up for alternate service of some kind and spend 2 years Then you received some money for it, but it wasn't, nobody got rich in 1W, let me tell you that. It was pretty minimal. And now we have a whole generation, almost two, where that has not been the situation. And it was something we became aware of at home in our conference. None of our leadership in our South Atlantic Conference, with the exception of a retired bishop or two, has spent any time in voluntary service or mission work. And I think we're feeling it. I think it is affecting the culture of our churches. So, like I told you last night, I preach to myself first. Young people, consider it. It's one of the best things I think you could ever do. This morning, our message shifts in focus a little bit off of the young people and more to the parents. But young people, eventually, most of you will be parents at some point, most likely. And so it's not too early to start listening to some things about parenting and training children. And, well, it's intimidating to preach about child training at any place, but it's better to preach about it away from home than what it is at home. So just say that for what it's worth as well. I told you last night I don't stand here as a master of anything that I say. I'm still learning. And the unfortunate thing about, well, life as a whole, but parenting in particular, is you don't get a trial run. Like, you get one crack at it, and you kind of learn as you go. And I, as well as all the parents here, have made our share of mistakes. Haven't done it perfectly. Things we would do differently if we had the second round at it. Our text is found in Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Verse that's given a lot of parents heartburn and cold sweat. And I think the verse is often wrangled to say something that it doesn't say, doesn't mean. But it's easy for us to take from this verse that you follow the right formula, you do the right training, and you'll get the right results. And if you haven't gotten the right results, there's something happened along the way on the part of the parent that they didn't do their job. I do not believe that this verse is posed as an ironclad guarantee that you follow the right formula, you do X, Y, and Z, add A to B, and you'll get the results you want. Nor is it an indictment on parents whose children, despite their best efforts, have not made good choices. I think perhaps a better understanding of this verse is, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, it will not depart from him. In other words, the things that we teach and instill and train in our children, even though they may choose to reject them, they still have the responsibility of the training that they received. And I think that is a much better way to understand this verse. Children are people. Children are not computer programs or robots that you can just punch in the right formula and you'll get the right results. They are free moral agents. They have the ability to choose. And sometimes, despite our best efforts, our children make choices that we're not pleased with, that we feel maybe are to their spiritual detriment. That happens. But it is an injunction for us. That is not an excuse for lazy parenting. Okay? And we talk about this in our Sunday school. What is the marriage of diligence on our part and relying on the Spirit of God? It's not by our own might or power. And that is right in focus when it comes to parenting. There's never an excuse to be haphazard or lazy in training our children, and yet we have to realize God is the one that saves them. And they are free moral agents. They can make their own choices. There's not a magic formula. There are no perfect parents. And so we need to understand this verse, I think, in that context. I find it more helpful when we think about training children to think about more about goals and less about methods. Because as I mentioned, children are children. They're people. And they have their own unique personalities and makeup and giftings and the way they respond to life. And what works for your children in terms of method may not be exactly what's going to work for my children. And even in the same family, parents, you know this. You have 4, 5, 6 children, and they're different. And what seemed to work well for the first one maybe doesn't. The second one needs a little different approach. And so the methodology varies. I'm not going to talk about methodology much at all because I don't know your child. I don't know what your child needs. I struggle to know my own children sufficiently well. But I think we can think about goals. What is it that you want your children to be? What are the goals that you have for your children? And I think all of us want our children to surrender their lives to Jesus and to be active, productive kingdom builders. Amen. I think that's, if you're a Christian parent here this morning, I think that's a universal. That's what we want. That's what we're after. And so let's think about child training within that context of what's the end goal? What are we hoping to achieve in training our children? And realize that the methods will vary somewhat. The Bible doesn't have just a terrible lot to say about child training. There's really one verse, I think, and it's somewhat general. It says, "Fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." And that is really the most specific verse, and perhaps there are others that would have, you know, some insight, but that's about it. It's pretty general. What does it mean not to provoke your child to wrath? What all is involved in bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? And so there are a lot of specifics that we have to glean from basic biblical truth and then apply them to raising our children, training our children. As I mentioned last night, I like to start with foundations and then build from there. So what are some foundations? What are some things that are kind of prerequisites, the things that need to be in place in order for the teaching and training program for our children to be effective? What do children need? And the focus today is on birth to 12. This evening we're going to talk about adolescence and youth and guidance there. But this morning is young children from 0 to 12. What are some important foundations for children that make our goals more accomplishable? Is that a word? We'll use it anyhow. You know what I mean. First of all, safety. A child, you heard the statistics last night, but a child needs to thrive at their best. For your training to be most effective, they need to understand and feel and know that they are in an environment that they are not going to suffer abuse or violence or in any way be unsafe. Now, can you always protect your children from danger and from harm? We know that that's not possible. Accidents happen to children, but that we are not creating an unsafe environment for our children. We are not the ones perpetrating the violence and the abuse and the trauma upon children. And when a child feels safe, they learn to trust. That's the second foundation, a foundation of trust. And I think these, I have four of them, and they build on each other: safety and then trust. And a lot of that has to do with your trustworthiness as a parent. And a young child can't verbalize, can't express, and can't articulate all this, but it does something for a child when you are a consistent person. That the child knows that dad's going to get up and go to work every morning, and mom's going to get up and cook breakfast and clean the house, and there's routine, and there's, you yourself are not erratic and chaotic in how you live your life. You're somewhat, at least moderately, organized and have yourself put together to some degree. You're trustworthy, and that builds trust. As a child feels safe and you are demonstrating a consistent life yourself, they learn to trust. They learn that mom and dad, if I have a scary nightmare, it's okay to go to their bedroom and I receive comfort. They find security there. That's where they naturally go. And children naturally will seek out their parents in a trusting way unless that safety is not there. If mom and dad are a source of trauma and violence, then they can't build trust. So safety yields trust. And then love is a natural flow of that, as there's a trusting relationship between parent and child. And the child begins to understand that not only is this person not going to hurt me, and not only is this person trustworthy, they've got themselves put together enough that I know kind of what to expect from them, but they actually care about me, and they're seeking my good, and they want my success, and they show love, and they sacrifice for my good. It's important for a child to experience love from their parents. And the fourth then is discipline. And you don't have to go very far. You can probably see it at the grocery store every week, what an undisciplined child looks like or how they act. At the end of the day, children, they may not, again, articulate it or say they like it, but a child thrives best when they know what the expectations are and what happens if they don't meet them. Where there's clear expectations, there's accountability, there's consequences, there's correction, there's guidance. That grounds a child. They thrive at their best when that is in place. Safety, trust, love, and discipline. One builds on the previous one. But I believe if any one of these elements is missing, or that order gets misaligned, there can be disastrous results. We know this kind of intuitively, but what happens if there is discipline without love? We've created an environment that's not safe. Discipline without love is really kind of abusive, right? If there's love without discipline, we've seen the results of that too, where children are spoiled and unmanageable and out of control. And the parent may be ever so doting and give a child everything that they want or ask for because they love them so much. But the child is not disciplined, and the child is really not happy, is not functioning well. And so each one of these builds on the other, and if any of those foundations is cracking, is crumbling, then it can lead to disastrous results for our children. And I'd like you to think about, so it's easy for us to sort of look out there and see, find homes where these foundations are not in place, but are there any cracks in our own foundation? It's a challenge I'm bringing to us this morning, to myself as well, as we think about safety, trust, love, and discipline. Josh McDowell, I believe it was, that said one time that rules without relationship will yield rebellion. And that's not necessarily the only thing that might yield rebellion in the heart of a child, but it is one of the things. Rules without relationships will yield rebellion. And that could be one of the cracks in our foundations. Reactionary parenting. I find young couples today that perhaps their own upbringing, the training that their parents tried to instill in them, was less than desirable, was sort of this lots of discipline but not much love. And they in turn then kind of react to that and kind of go into the opposite ditch where the child is just kind of left to their own devices and really isn't held accountable, and everything is just, you know, dialogue without really any conclusion to the matter. Reactionary parenting. Parents who are reacting to how they were raised and kind of falling off the boat on the other side. Busyness can cause a crack in our foundation where children are just kind of falling through the cracks. Mom and dad are just too busy. They don't really have time for the children. The children are somewhat neglected and not attended to. Questions to ask ourselves. Are our foundations starting to crack? I want to also say before we go further that the best trained children still need salvation. You cannot train your child into the kingdom of God. They need to make that choice for themselves. Even the best trained children will still need salvation. So what should children, what should we be training in our children? Children should be trained, number one, to respect authority. The one scripture we do have here is that children are to be obedient to their parents. They need to learn to be obedient. They need to learn that they are not in charge. And some of that learning oftentimes takes place at a pretty early age. Toddlers, even toddlers, like to be in charge. They like to be, and in reality, for about the first year of their life, they sort of are. Like, you got to take care of an infant. I mean, they have needs that only you can meet. They can't meet them themselves. You got to pay attention to them. You got to take care of them. And they really are the kind of the ones dictating what you do and when you do it. But they eventually need to learn, and the earlier the better, that the world does not revolve around them. Children naturally are selfish. But children need to learn that they are not in charge. Mom and dad are in charge. And for very young children, this changes as children get older, so hear me carefully here. But for very young children, they do need to obey simply because mom and dad said so. Because a very young child isn't necessarily old enough to completely and in a mature way understand all the whys. When they are, then they need that explanation to be given. And we're going to talk about that more this evening. But young children need to learn to know what no means and what yes means. And when mom and dad say something, they don't necessarily have to always know why. They just simply need to do it because mom and dad said this is what needs to be done. And that will tend to spill over into how they relate to authority at school, authority in the workplace, authority with civil government as they grow older. That training that happens with how children obey their parents carries over into how they relate to really all authority figures in their life from that point on. Children should learn to be respectful, to have good manners. And again, some of this was going to vary from community to community and from culture to culture. I had to learn some things when I moved to South Carolina as an adult from Pennsylvania. If I would have addressed my dad as sir, there's a pretty good chance I would have at least been questioned whether I was being a smart aleck. It just wasn't how we defined good manners. And sir was often used when you were kind of mocking someone's authority. Well, that's not the case in South Carolina. You better address an elder as sir or ma'am, as the case may be. And so I had to learn that. And so some of those things are not set in stone. They're going to vary according to culture. I understand that. But wherever you find yourself and what is considered good manners and respectful behavior in the setting that you find yourself raising your children in, that's what they need to learn. To be courteous. To be grateful. To be thankful. These are things that children need to learn. They have to practice. It doesn't just, like, yes, when they become Christians and the work of God is in their lives, that certainly produces the fruit of gratefulness and thanksgiving. But children can learn to do that as young children, to be grateful for what they have, to be thankful, to care for others' property, to share their own stuff. This is all part of being respectful, having good manners, to care for others' feelings, to not be a bully or to be rude, to say things that hurt people, to watch their speech. Children can learn to work and be productive. As parents, we need to have a keen eye and be discerning that we are giving our children tasks that are age appropriate for them to do, and to not to ask them to do something that they really are not old enough or capable enough yet to do. Your 10-year-old boy, if you're a farmer, may actually be pretty good at running a tractor. Or if you're an excavator, he may be pretty good at running a backhoe. And it's okay if you have him run the backhoe a little bit. But despite how good he is, he shouldn't be asked to do it for 10 or 12 hours straight. Because his stamina is not the same as a grown man's. And his attention span is going to be shorter than a mature man's. And so your children may have an adult skill, but probably shouldn't still be given an adult responsibility, even though they may have the skills. Does that make sense? But children should learn to work. They will be the most satisfied with themselves if they learn to work. They may not always like the work, but they will, learning to work and learning to be productive is so important for a child's, how they view themselves. Like, nobody wants to see themselves as worthless. Even though it's fun to set around, eventually that starts to erode how a child views themselves. And if a child continually views themselves as really not worth that much, and about the only thing they can do is sit on the lazy boy and play computer games, at the end of the day, children really want to see themselves as more than that and capable of more than that. So teach your children to work. But have reasonable expectations for the work that they do. Again, your 12-year-old is not going to be as quick or as efficient or probably do it as completely as what you will as an adult. That should be expected. And of course you could do it better and faster. That's not really the point. You're teaching your child to work. And work alongside them if they need help. Don't give them more than what they can handle. Child should, early on in learning to work, should understand the relationship or the cause and effect between work and reward. And I'm not saying you need to pay your child for every little chore that they do. They need to learn to work just because they're part of the family and there's family chores and there's stuff that needs done and they can just do it. But a child that continually works and doesn't see any tangible reward quickly gets discouraged. I'm convinced of that. And it ends up affecting their work ethic. If they don't see any correlation between work and result, that it has produced something in terms of monetary reward, whether it's, doesn't have to be monetary, it's maybe a perk or a gift or an experience can be part of that reward. But again, use discernment. You know what your children need. But I think that's an important principle. The children understand that. None of us like to work for free, right? It doesn't inspire us to do our best and do our good job if we're doing it for nothing. And your children even more so. Children need to understand a relationship between work and reward. In our work, we should emphasize diligence and doing our best. We talked about that last night. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Do it heartily as unto the Lord. And children need to be learning that concept at an early age, that there's no merit, really, in half-hearted work or work that is less than your best. Your best may not be as good as someone else's best. Everyone has different gifts and has different talents, but each child should be encouraged to do their best at whatever they do. Whether that's schoolwork, whether it's helping around the house or in the family business, not everybody has the same talents and giftings. Not all students are straight A. We understand that. It's okay. But a child should be doing their best, should be encouraged to do their best at whatever they do. Your child's accomplishments, my child's accomplishments, the work that they do should not be for your personal gratification. That's a danger. I have seen parents who are, or at least attempting, to live vicariously through their children. And they want their children to learn to play the piano. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a great thing. Or they want their child to do this. Or they want their child to make straight A's. They want their child to whatever. They have a whole list of things they want their child to accomplish. And really, it's feathers in their own cap and not necessarily the good of the child that is primarily in focus. And I'm just going to be blunt. I think that's one that's affecting Anabaptist communities more than what we'd like to admit. That we are trying to give our children experiences that we wish we would have had and never got the chance. And that's okay to a point. But your child is not your trophy piece. They're God's. You've been stewarded with training them to surrender their lives to Jesus and be productive in the kingdom of God. It's not about you, parents. It's not about your image as a parent. It's not about your prowess in what your child accomplishes that is really the most important. I remember witnessing a young man. Well, it started when he was a young boy. His parents were putting so much pressure on him in school to make good grades and to excel and everything. And he was excelling. He was brilliant. He was a straight-A student. He was athletic. He was setting broad jump records on Fields Day. And that young man had almost no joy in his accomplishments because of the pressure that was being put on him by his parents to succeed. I think he's at a better spot now, but it was kind of tragic, kind of heartrending to watch that young man grow up and live and operate. Very talented young man, but to operate under that pressure that was really more for his parents than for his own growth and development. So be careful of that. There needs to be appropriate consequences when expectations are not met. And again, methodology varies. You need to know your children. And you know this from observation and experience. One child, you give them the hairy eyeball, and that's all it takes. And they'll straighten up. And the other one is a lot more, and sometimes they still don't want to. But appropriate consequences when expectations are not met. I believe it's important that the punishment fit the crime. And parents, we need to check ourselves in the consequences that we dole out. How serious was the offense? The punishment needs to fit the crime. And that we're not punishing harshly. The child maybe needs punishment, maybe needs consequences, but really we've kind of let our emotions get involved, and we've doled out way more than what the infraction really deserves. As parents, we need to try to discern between what is rebellion and what is simply immaturity. And we treat those things differently. And unfortunately, the first child is kind of the guinea pig. Hopefully, parents learn some of that with the first child. But rebellion and immaturity are two different things. Children are going to do things that are foolish just because they're children. They haven't thought through the consequences of their actions. They've done something that's immature and foolish, but it may not necessarily be an act of rebellion. Both need consequences. Foolishness, immaturity needs to be dealt with, but it is a different thing than rebellion. And I think as parents, we need to try to be discerning enough to figure out the difference between immaturity and rebellion. Children should learn about gender roles. Boys should learn to be boys and grow up to be men, and girls should learn to be girls and grow up to be ladies. And in our society today, this is like society is completely four sheets to the wind on this issue of gender identity and what it means to be. Well, they can't even tell you what it means to be a woman anymore. It's gender is kind of whatever you want it to be at the moment. And so we have a responsibility to our children to teach them the difference between boys and girls. And for boys, it's okay to be boys, and for girls, it's okay to be girls, and they should learn how to function within those God-given roles. It is unfortunate, but it's still reality that our children cannot remain innocent longer than what they is possible today. If you want to be the ones to be teaching your children about healthy sexuality and gender roles and what it means to be a woman and what it means to be a man, you're going to need to do it before 12 years old. Statistics show us that most of, well, men and young boys and girls, they get involved in pornography, first access it by the age of 10. That's typical. And so if you want your children to learn how God designed them and what the proper role is for them as a boy or a girl growing to be a man or a woman, again, I think it's unfortunate. They're almost hardly old enough for the knowledge, but if they don't get it from you, they're going to get it from somewhere else. And so that needs to be happening, I think, before 10. I know that's an opinion, but I think it's an informed opinion. There is so much smut out there and so much confusion in our society about what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman. And what happens in society, we know, has its influence or can have its influence on the church. And so we need to take the responsibility as parents to be on the front edge of this. And again, it's unfortunate, I think, that our children cannot remain innocent longer than what is really possible in today's world. That's part of child training. And finally, and perhaps this should have been first, teaching them about God and God's ways. Children can learn to pray. Children can learn to memorize scripture. Children can learn to do right and to choose right. Again, that doesn't negate their need for salvation. But children need to learn to discern between what is right and what is wrong. And there's training involved in that. And that's part of our responsibility. Children should learn to associate the rules that you have for your home and your family to make a connection to them, for them, to the higher law of what God says in His Word. And they should be able to see that connection. This is why we do things the way we do. And maybe another family does things a little different, but this is how our family does, and this is why. And they make that association, that it's not just because mom and dad got this crazy idea and that they decide that's how they want to do things. But most likely there's a reason that ties back to how your parents understand the Bible and God's will for you as their child. Train up a child in the way that he or she should go, and when he is old, that training will not depart from them. They may reject it, they may not follow it, but they can't forget it and they can't completely ignore it. They have it. They have a choice on what they do with it, but they can't, it will not depart from them. They may not make the choices that you hope they do, but you have, as a parent, have done your part to set them up for success. We were talking about this at the breakfast table a little bit, and I think that's the phrase that Ann used, that her parents set her up for success to make the right choices. And that's our job, to point your child to Christ, to model what it means to be a follower of Jesus, and to train and instill the values and the behaviors in your child that put them in the best position to choose to follow the Lord and be active in His kingdom. I turn it back to David.
We'll call for a song.
Number 461.